Hi, welcome to Neuroverse, a podcast hosted by Carolina
and Clara, where we discuss all matters from neuroscience to philosophy and beyond.
Today's episode is on the evolutionary impact of the lichen lifestyle on the fungal genome. To help us with this topic, we are joined by special guest George Mears. George is undergoing his PhD in the LIDO program with affiliation with Royal Holloway and Kew Gardens, primarily working with Professor Robin Williams. Previously, George was at the University of Bristol, where he did his master's in bioinformatics, researching the genomic characteristics of the evolutionary emergence of lichen symbiosis in lichen-forming fungi. And before that, George was at Cardiff University studying biochemistry. Welcome to the podcast, George.
Thank you very much for having me. I'm excited.
So to start us all off, what are lichen and why are they important?
So lichens are composite organisms. They are traditionally viewed as a symbiotic interaction between a fungus and a plant. And the fungus is termed a mycobiont, and the plant aspect is called a photobiont. And these are usually photosynthetic bacteria or green algae. However, less conventionally, like more recently, there are other organisms that are seen in the lichen thallus, basically. And this can be other fungi or bacteria. So yeah, they come together to form a composite organism. That's a lichen. And why are they important? Well, it's estimated that approximately 8% of the Earth's terrestrial landmass is covered in lichens. They're abundant, they're everywhere, and they're just really cool organisms.
Mm-hmm. So what is their primary function?
So I suppose you've got to look at fungi in general, and fungi have to get their nutrients from their environment. So the lichen lifestyle has been adopted as a nutritional strategy. So they've basically formed a mutualistic association with a plant, in this case, to get their food source.
Mm-hmm.
So the plant will provide carbon and the fungus in return will provide shelter, nutrients and water. So it's a trade-off, and mutualistic associations in nature are ubiquitous, and they are an important nutritional strategy, basically. And these symbiotic interactions are things that shape the evolution of certain species, and they are big drivers of evolutionary diversification. So yeah, does that answer your question?
Yeah, definitely. I read that, I think, the symbiosis between plants and fungi and fungi and lichens, that was the first time that the term symbiosis appeared in biology, and it was quite controversial because initially people thought that fungi were its own thing and that, you know, plants were its own thing, and now they have like a paradigm shift and accept that, oh, there's like this mutualistic relationship happening. Yeah, and so you looked a lot of the genomic characterizations of the evolution. Could you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, so I think the evolution of the lichen lifestyle, specifically for the fungal part, because that's what I was interested in, is quite complex. There have been multiple independent evolutionary emergences of the lichen lifestyle across the fungal tree of life. The question we were trying to address is, did these independent events result from independent molecular mechanisms, or were they the result of pre-existing ancestral traits that were shared, or a combination of both? So to do this, we looked at a variety of fungi from across the fungal tree of life, including a lot of lichen-forming fungi, and interrogated their genomes. And a comparative genomic approach provides an unbiased view of how the symbiotic relationship of the lichen lifestyle influences their lives and their genomes. because lichens are notoriously hard to study because they're very slow growing, because of their mutualistic interactions, they're hard to isolate as well. So interrogate the genomes, that's a good way to get an understanding of what's going on. So we wanted to look at multiple different characteristics of the fungal genome that are important for fungal lifestyles in general. So we looked at some functional genomic characteristics such as casein repertoires, specifically plant cell wall degrading enzymes. And these plant cell wall degrading enzymes are important for fungi in general because they have to get their nutrients from their environment, so degrading plant material. So you can get a good indication of what's going on in their lifestyle from that. We also looked at biosynthetic gene clusters and their distributions. Again, the production of specialized secondary metabolites is a way of organisms protecting themselves or protecting other species that they might be in association with. So those were the two main features that we looked at from a functional aspect. And then we also looked at the expansion and contraction of certain gene families by reconstructing ancestral states through phylogenomics.
How do you reconstruct the ancestral states?
How much time you got? So if you've seen the phylogenomic tree before, you know, where you create all the different branches. Mm-hmm. So if you sequence the genome of these species, you're getting the species at the end of the branch, right? That's the genome that you're seeing. But with lots of clever models and bioinformatic tools, you can go backwards on the tree of life by calibrating the tree with fossil records and knowing, well, reversing protein evolutionary models. So the way proteins evolve through mutations, you can travel back on the tree and look at most recent common ancestors of certain species or certain clades of species and go, okay, at this node on the tree, there were certain amount of gene families expanding, and that might be relevant to the type of lifestyle of those species that are in that clade or contracting, doesn't matter. So that was one, a bit more of a complex way of looking at things. And then, yeah, also seeing how related the species were, like phylogenetically. So that was our approach to try and understand what was going on.
Yeah. So I wanted to ask, just to clarify, because I know in neuroscience research, there's also a lot of research on the evolution of the brain and neurons. And for that, we basically compare, or people basically compare, like, across species. So usually it's looking at human neurons or brains, and then primates, and then mice, and then chicken, and like kind of those subclasses. But what you're describing, do you look at different species of lichens, and are some of them evolutionarily older? Is that what you're saying?
So I think what was important for our study was to include lichen-forming fungi that were phylogenetically diverse on the fungal tree of life, and encompass fungi from a variety of different lifestyles, and as well as lichen-forming fungi from different sister clades on the fungal tree of life, to really get a broad idea of what's going on. Because a lot of previous studies have focused on small subsets of lichen-forming fungi. And again, that is another problem, is that there's not that many genomes available for lichen-forming fungi, but more and more are becoming available, and this is all being accelerated with genome sequencing becoming more accessible and cheaper, etc. Mm-hmm. Does that answer your question?
Yeah. So is the fungal tree of life just like a phylogenetic tree of fungi?
Yes.
Okay,
yeah.
Cool. I love that term, fungal tree of life.
Yeah, it is cool. Yeah. The whole fungal kingdom is incredible.
Yeah.
And this is what I mean. There's examples where, so the largest extant fungal clade of lichen-forming fungi is called Lacanorhamycetes, and they have most of the lichen-forming fungal genomes. But what's really interesting is we included lichen-forming fungi from other sister clades as well, but there are some species in that in that clade, the Lacanomyces, that have lost the ability to form or form a lichen. They've lost the lichen lifestyle. And we included those in our study because that's really important. We want to know what's going on under the hood.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like what have they lost, which means they can no longer form lichens. Interestingly, some lichens, not many, I mean, lichens generally are obligate mutualists, meaning they only exist as a lichen. They don't take on other lifestyles. But some lichen-forming fungi have the ability to be saprotrophic, where they eat and degrade plant material as an alternative lifestyle. So they have the ability to switch lifestyles, some of them, which is pretty cool.
That's cool. I like the term lifestyle as well.
Yeah. Yeah, just pick and choose what they want to do.
Yeah.
Not all of them, but yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it shows like so much diversity and function. And I think it also relates to a lot of, for example, sea creatures.
Yeah.
Yeah. So speaking about like diversification and or why they may choose a specific lifestyle, when were you looking at lichen that are found in specific regions on Earth, or like does it depend on the environment, like the climate that they are in and everything?
So it was a bioinformatics project, so we were using publicly available genomes.
Mm-hmm.
Where they were collected from wasn't really that important, but what was important was, based on previous literature, was making sure the fungal genomes were phylogenetically diverse.
Mm.
So we covered three fungal sister clades from Ascomycota, I believe. However, there are known lichen-forming fungi in Basidomycota, but they were almost too phylogenetically diverse for us to include them in the study.
Mm.
Because the further you go away from each other on phylogenetically, the differences that you're observing might not be due to them being... Basically, they've evolved so differently that you don't know whether you can attribute these genomic characteristics being associated to their lifestyle.
Mm-hmm.
From what I understand, that was our approach.
Are those terms you said a name, a species of fungi?
The terms?
Yeah.
Oh, so the Ascomycota is a phylum, so it's a higher taxonomic sort of classification. And then that breaks down into mm-hmm. classes.
Mm-hmm.
And we were studying three fungal classes. Okay. That are relatively closely related. So yeah, the main things were phylogenetically diverse, variety of fungal lifestyles, so lichens and non-lichens,
mm-hmm.
so saprotrophic fungi, some parasitic fungi of fish, some parasites of other organisms, fungi from all sorts of different lifestyles. That was really important. And also, like I said before, fungi that have lost the ability to form lichens
mm-hmm.
in this specific clade, the Lacanomyces.
Yeah, that's really interesting. I don't know if you've already covered this, but I was wondering if what was the main driving force for them to no longer be able to have a symbiotic relationship with fungi? Was it their genetics? Was it their lifestyle? Was it they no longer needed whatever the fungi were providing because they evolved?
In terms of their genomic characteristics, and again, like we analysed a subset,
mm-hmm.
not all of the genomic characteristics, so it's hard to say on that front. But from what we looked at, there were correlating gene families that were expanding and contracting in these lichen-forming fungi, and some of these gene families relate to older ancestral states as well, which mm-hmm. is quite hard to get your head around. And they also share the same expanding and contracting gene families.
Mm-hmm.
So you're like, okay, well, these gene families might be important to the lichen lifestyle. We were just trying to get a general picture of the lichen lifestyle and its impact on the fungal genome. I can dive into more detail of like what we actually found.
Yeah, I wanted to ask, like, so what were your main findings?
Yeah. So if we look at cazyme repertoires,
What are cazymes? Yeah.
So carbohydrate active enzymes.
A catalysis? Catalysts?
The enzymes that break down carbohydrates.
Mm-hmm.
And a very popular one to study are these plant cell wall degrading enzymes.
Because
they're really important for the fungal lifestyle. So in terms of the cazymes, So previously, Russell and colleagues published a paper, and this was the first large-scale comparative genomic study of lichen-forming fungi. It's big, like, it hasn't been done before. And they found that the casine repertoires in the lichen-forming fungi that they studied were mostly reduced. So there's a universal loss of casimes, specifically the plant's cell wall degrading enzymes, which, if you think about the fungal lifestyle in general, you know, fungi that are like saprotrophic use these plant cell wall degrading enzymes to break down like plant material. But if you're in a lichen, you have this mutualistic agreement where you exchange nutrients and food. You don't need those. You don't need to break down plant material. So it would make sense that these gene families would be contracted. There would be fewer. There would be less need for them. So that was one thing. But what we found was, for the majority of lichen-forming fungi, this was the case. They had reduced casine repertoires. However, by including phylogenetically diverse fungi, we found that this isn't always the case. There are a few that have large casine repertoires. Interestingly though, we think, or we sort of theorize, that this is due to a recent evolutionary transition to the lichen lifestyle. So there hasn't been enough evolutionary time for these genes to degrade over time and become non-functional. So reduced casine repertoires could still be a hallmark for the lichen lifestyle on the fungal genome. So it doesn't rule out what they've suggested.
But it may not be necessary.
Yeah, it may not be like crucial to forming a lichen. It's almost like that happens later on. You know, you have the ability to form a lichen, and then through that mutualistic association, you know, perhaps you lose the ability to degrade plant material, and that's why some lichens are obligate and they can't, you know, they only exist as a lichen. So yeah, that was quite cool. Maybe like certain lichen fungi that are in like a transition state. And it is known that some of those species that had high casine repertoires could adopt alternative lifestyles.
Yeah.
So they're keeping their options open.
Exactly. I feel like that makes a lot of sense, and maybe perhaps forming symbiotic relationships with other organisms, given that, I don't know, they have this extra ability of being able to, of having these casines. Yeah, really interesting. And also, I read that lichen are around since like the Jurassic era, so clearly around a very long time. I'm sure they've had like several evolutionary waves. So no wonder that there's a lot to study in the phylogeny, and also that any other mutations that we see are very brand new in terms of like their lifestyle, etc.
Yeah, it's a symbiotic interaction between fungi and plants predates a transition to dry land. So it's a very long-lasting relationship that they've had with each other.
Yeah.
And a transition to dry land, the terrestrialization of these animals. So all of the theories for the terrestrialization of fungi to dry land are contemporaneous with plants, meaning that it occurred at the same time, which makes sense. And their ability to form symbiotic interactions has allowed them to expand their ecological niche, and fungi are pretty much found in every terrestrial ecosystem. And they have an ability to occupy some of the harshest environments through these symbiotic interactions. Yeah, it's crazy how long they've been going on. There's some really cool stats, like I think 90% of all land plants form mutualistic interactions with mycorrhizal fungi. Nearly all plants have associations with endophytic fungi, fungi that live inside the plants, but not as well studied. And lichens too are abundant everywhere. They're really cool. One of the first things to inhabit like a barren rock somewhere, you know?
Yeah.
You have the tectonic plate shift, boom, rock it out. Lichens are there.
Yeah, awesome. So I was wondering if you looked into like the structure of lichens, because I did a little bit of digging and I saw that lichens can be divided into this terminology of like the cortex, a symbiont layer, and then the medulla. And I found it really interesting because the cortex and medulla are also terms used in the brain, and we often talk about like structure function relationships, and I was wondering if that's the case for lichen as well, if like some specific aspect of their structure relates to their function?
I imagine so.
Okay.
We didn't dive too deep into the structure of lichens, mm-hmm. but they come in lots of weird and wonderful shapes and sizes.
Yeah.
Typically, you have the photosynthetic organism, the photobiont, and that's encapsulated by the fungus.
Okay.
And that what's inside is called like the lichen thallus. That's the main thing. But there are lichens which like sort of go against this convention, where you have like fungi that are wrapped by plant
nice.
Organisms. Yeah, they do get really quite funky.
Nice.
in the way they look, but I didn't really dive too much into the mm-hmm. morphology and how that impacts their lifestyle.
Oh, okay.
So I suppose one of the things that I haven't mentioned yet is that what we found from the study was there were shared gene family expansions in majority of the lichen-conforming fungi, or at least events which we believe relate to the evolutionary emergence of this lifestyle. And these were associated with alcohol dehydrogenases, which are enzymes that the fungi use to break down carbohydrates that are provided from the plant that they're associated with into these things called polyols, I believe. And these polyols are multifunctional in the lichen thallus. They can provide cryoprotection, I believe is how it's termed. So against extreme like cold, they provide other very useful elements to the lichen itself that helps them sort of just utilize what's being provided by the plant in the lichen. So that's one thing mm-hmm. that was definitely expanding and was common amongst all these emergences of the lichen lifestyle. And the other thing was an expansion of genes relating to heterokaryon incompatibility. And I believe these genes help identifying self and non-self genomic material.
Interesting.
Which you think would be, you know, that seems very valuable.
Yeah.
If you're in a composite organism where you're interacting with other fungi, bacteria, and these photosynthetic organisms as well, then yeah, you need to be able to understand, you know, what's mm-hmm. my own genetic material, what are other people's.
That's so cool. That really raises questions on like individuality and what consists of an individual, which we talked a lot about in our first episode.
Yeah. And I won't talk too much about it now, but there's a really interesting article that was released in 2015. I can't remember the author, but I'm sure I can provide the link.
We'll link it in the show notes and stuff.
It's called Queer Theory of Lichens. And yeah, it brings to question, you know, lichens are composite organisms. Humans are kind of technically composite organisms as well.
Yeah.
We have lots of different biomes going on in our bodies.
Mm-hmm.
Especially if you take into account the microbiome and how most of us is actually bacteria.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, what's classed as an individual and what's not, and how that relates to sexuality. And
mm-hmm.
yeah, it's a really interesting article.
Sounds amazing.
I highly recommend reading
mm-hmm.
if you're interested in that type of stuff. I think that's mostly what I have to say.
It's cool.
Firstly, I always knew, like, I know how to identify lichen when I'm walking through the woods or whatever, but I never really knew what they were, and I didn't know that they were this symbiotic lifestyle, essentially linking fungi with plants. So it's been really interesting to hear about it all from an expert, and that I think it's so cool how it raises this question of individuality and is a really good example of testing how we define an individual.
Yeah, it's really interesting.
And how like a fungi could be just a fungi, but it could also be part of a mycorrhizal network, but it could also be its lichen self.
yeah, it really like blurs the distinction between, you know, an individual and what's not.
Mm-hmm.
You don't.
Yeah, super interesting. And now I'm now really curious to know, to find out the answers about all of these other questions, like you said, what causes a lichen to change from one lifestyle to another, and like what causes a lichen to stop having a symbiotic relationship with a fungi, and what then happens to them? Like, do they just become super independent, or do they find another partner and and partner up with some other organism?
Well, fungi are notorious for being evolutionary shapeshifters.
And promiscuous.
Yeah, so, I mean, if anyone's going to adapt and overcome and conquer a different lifestyle, and, you know, I think it's going to be fungi for sure.
Yeah. But, sorry, random question that I need to ask. You spoke about how evolutionarily old lichen are, but how long, what is their lifespan? Like, how long
lichens
do they... Yeah.
I mean, they go on for a long time.
But is it limited to the lifespan of the plant or the fungi?
So, lichens can dehydrate very well and just, you know, they can survive in very hostile environments.
Mm-hmm.
So it takes a lot to kill a lichen, from what I understand.
So they can adapt and change, like, the plant that they are connected to?
Yeah. I mean, I don't know who would give up first in that mutualistic agreement, but I think, yeah, it would take a lot to get rid of them. They just keep going.
Yeah. I mean, they were around in the Jurassic era and in the transition to land era, which is, yeah, speaks to how conserved they are.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they're pretty cool.
Yeah. And with that, I think we'll end today's episode. Thank you so much for joining us, George.
Thank you very much for having me. It's been a pleasure.
Yeah, thank you so much for speaking to us about lichen and fungi.
Yeah. If you liked today's episode, please feel free to share it on your social media and follow us, neuroverse_pod, on Instagram and Twitter.
And check out our website for all of our show notes, where we will link the papers and articles mentioned in today's episode. Thank you for listening.